tradition and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome to Tuesday. Thanks so much for being here, and what an afternoon we have in store for you. Let's get started with some news and headlines, and then the guests, and then the phone calls. And Tyler Booker, he was here just a few weeks ago. Some very strong comments from him discussing the generational gap from past Alabama players. Time has passed. Was he referring to Bo Scarborough, who played many years ago, saying people want to talk about it's a new generation? When we got to college, we were a new generation, but what we did carried on the tradition of the school. It's a privilege to play for Alabama. Y'all better get y'all's facts right and know the history behind this school. I need somebody to explain to me what this Twitter battle is all about. So Mike Rodak joins us. And Mike, thank you very, very much. I'm confused, not the first time. We'll get to the events of Saturday, but what's going on here between Tyler Booker, Bo Scarborough, and the old and the new? Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Paul. It's, you know, it's this generational gap that Tyler Booker alluded to on Monday, and it was kind of out of nowhere. It was an answer really about something else Nick Saban said about the future being now, but Tyler Booker brought up how things are different now for players in modern college football, modern, you know, college athletics in general, and essentially said we get compared to a lot of these old Bama teams of the past, but things are different for us now. And he says we still want to play like those old teams did, but you know, it's just different. There's a different generation, and you know, given the setting that we have, you know, for Alabama these days, where even when we're talking to players, everything's a very kind of controlled press conference setting. It's not like you can just follow up and be like, well, you know, what do you mean by that? So it's something that kind of lingered. And, you know, I put out the quote that he said, and, you know, I did see Bo Scarborough's tweet as well, and not directly referencing Tyler Booker, but kind of referring to that different generation. And, you know, it's something that we kind of saw a little bit last year with Greg McElroy coming out and saying, you know, players don't have it quite as rough as they did, you know, 10, 15 years ago when they were practicing under Nick Saban, and there was some pushback there. And we've seen this back and forth now for a couple of years. And there's players that are frustrated with how things are going, veteran players, you know, who have played here in the past, and players here who say, we're trying hard, we're doing everything we need to do. It's just, you know, might look different than it did before. So that's ongoing. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer on either side, but something I think we're hearing more and more about.
More important than that is something else, that was said in one of your articles. You talk about, I think it was Booker who said that they didn't have the best energy last week, as almost as if they took winning for granted. Mike, I must have missed last week, must have missed being in Tuscaloosa, but it seemed like the biggest game in the college football season, especially to a school that's coming off of a disappointing season where they lost two and could have lost five, and they should have lost to the team that they were playing. Can you help square all that for me?
Yeah, it's obviously an alarming quote when you hear that. And look, I mean, Tyler Booker has kind of become the spokesman of this Alabama team, even as a sophomore, you know, in his third game now as a sophomore, you know, partly because he's a pretty open talker. You know, when he talks to us, he's going to speak honestly. And, you know, we like that. We appreciate that in the media. He also talks pretty frequently now because he has an NIL deal where he's being, you know, paid essentially by, you know, a radio show in Birmingham the next round to come on every week. And so that's why he was on today talking about that right after yesterday's press conference, and, you know, started talking about the practice of last week and how things were. There's not enough energy. And they pushed back against him a little bit and said, hey, you know, it's a Texas game. You know, why was there no energy? And he said, look, I'm not saying there was no energy, but we needed better energy, and we needed more of a sense of urgency, essentially, is what he was saying, that players were too lackadaisical after they had won the Middle Tennessee State game. And then they kind of fell into that trap of thinking they were good, which is something that, you know, he referenced was maybe a problem last year as well. So, look, it's one of those things where we asked Nick Saban, too, a couple days ago, like, you know, what's the energy of this team coming into the game? And he said it was good. And I think Nick Saban's been very positive about this team and saying they're doing everything right. So to hear something Tyler Booker said that cuts against that a little bit and says, no, like, we didn't have a great week of practice. We need to be better. You're just trying to parse, you know, where's the truth here and what's truly the problem. And right now I think there's some mixed messages.
Talking to Mike Rodak from 24/7, let's get to the real question. And I haven't heard any substantive answers, and I realize that the game Saturday is not exactly a Titanic tilt. But what about the quarterback situation, Mike?
Yeah, that's one where if you look and listen to every single thing that Nick Saban said through the course of fall camp, that this competition was not going to end after one game. I think you can assume that also means after two games. And that if a guy doesn't play well, there's going to be an opportunity for somebody else to play. Assuming he's, you know, true to his word on that one, I think there's an opportunity for another quarterback to get some sort of playing time and some sort of legitimate opportunity to prove himself as a starter moving forward in this game, this South Florida game. Now, I think multiple quarterbacks would have played either way. I mean, we're talking about South Florida. It's one of the worst teams in FBS the last couple of years. Even if Jalen Milroe was coming off a great game against a win against Texas, other guys would probably still get into this game. But now I think there's more of an audition for Tyler Buchner, and it's still a question of, do we see Milroe first? Do we see Buchner first? I know, you know, with Alabama shutting down all the practice access as they have, all we can really see from practice is the photos that they choose to send out. There were a couple photos yesterday showing Buchner with what looked like the first team offense. We're going to have to figure out how that goes the rest of this week here. And again, I think there's going to be multiple quarterbacks. I think this is not decided going into the Ole Miss game next week. And yeah, it's still a competition. Look at the depth chart. There's still three oars at that position at quarterback.
After the game, Mike, Nick Saban at his press conference was very reflective, very appreciative of the moment, saying that games like that were a privilege. And it's caused some people, including one website, Outkick, to start speculating if Nick Saban wasn't telegraphing his retirement with that. I realize there's always going to be the conversation about when Nick Saban is done, especially after a humiliating loss. But Mike, you were there. Well, what did it sound like to you?
It was interesting because it was sort of an addendum to his press conference. He had finished getting through the questions, and I'll say this, like, Nick Saban's been very good lately in terms of being calm and respectful and giving good answers and not being explosive. And I think he's been intentional on that end. And he finished what was a really calm, you know, measured press conference. And he kind of started to step away. And then he came back to the podium and, you know, essentially delivered what you just said about this game being a privilege and all that. And, you know, I think we kind of discussed it among ourselves. There's probably a recruiting aspect to that. You know, there's tons and tons of recruits and their families in the building. And, you know, I think he's trying to send a positive message to them. He's trying to send a positive message to all the fans that just went to that game and are, you know, probably listening to him and essentially trying to say, like, you know, we respect the moment. We respect what just happened. And everybody being here and having all the attention on us as it is, and essentially trying to say that, you know, we let them down. So, you know, is there a deeper meaning in terms of his future and how many of these type of games he has left? Like, I wouldn't rule it out. I don't know if that was the purpose in that moment for him saying that, but again, there's a noticeable change with him this year that I've seen. And trying to put your finger on it and say exactly what it means is still tough, but it's there, and I've definitely noticed it.
Mike, finally, and I realize at this point we're all grasping for straws, trying to figure out what we saw and digest that and then interpret what it means, but you've covered this team for a while now. You know how bad it was. What does the rest of the season look like? Is this team capable of – and anyone's always capable, but I mean, does this look like a championship team to you?
No, it doesn't. And I go back to what Nick Saban said a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago on his radio show, when I think he had a really honest moment and was asked about, you know, comparing this team to past championship teams. And he said, I don't know if we have the talent to do it. And he said it twice. And I think there was intentionality and meaning behind that. I don't think it was some message to his team. I don't think it was some motivational tactic. I think it was an honest answer in that moment based on what he had seen. And I think it's played out, you know, through this Texas game so far. And this team is not top five, not top 10 talent wise at quarterback. It's not top 10 at wide receiver. The offensive line is struggling. The defense is not elite. And there's just a lot of things that need to get fixed. And I know people will point to the 2015 season as losing a game early to Ole Miss and then running the table, winning a national title, having Jake Coker at quarterback. That's going to be tough for this team. They don't have Derrick Henry. They don't have the defense they had in 2015. There's issues, you know, with this group. And to have a loss this early in the season to put you behind the eight ball where you can't take another loss, having to play eight SEC games and then go beat maybe Georgia in the SEC title game in order to get to the playoff, I don't think this team's going to do it. And if you're talking about where they are on November 30th when they finish the season, the regular season, I still think this is a two or three loss team. And that's where I've been on this group since the spring. You know, I think when I was on your show back then. So I don't think anything's really changed.
Mike, many thanks. Great to have you with us. Mike Rodak from 24/7 with some chilling words there about the Crimson Tide. On Friday, we had a very special day. We did not note it because there was so much chaos going on, but Kathy Dupre, who's been at ESPN for 20 years, seems like she's been on this show every day since we've been on for almost 10 years, celebrated her anniversary with ESPN, and we salute her. Look at that, with Reese Davis and Mark Mays, who used to be part of the late night show. Kathy has played a critical role, and we hope she'll continue to as we head to the break here on a Tuesday.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we had Mike Rodak on. Chrissy will join us at 4:30. Reese Davis from College Game Day and Stinch in the final hour. You see this from Lane Kiffin. He was praising the fans at the Tulane game, but essentially challenging Ole Miss fans to stay to the end of the game, clearly mimicking his old boss, Nick Saban, who has done that on more than one occasion. Given the choice of staying in a hot stadium, 90 degrees when in a 50-point blowout, as opposed to going down to the square. I mean, Lane, you got a losing proposition there, my friend. I mean, come on. Let's stay here and watch Ole Miss beat Mercer by 90 points when we can go down to one of the coolest college towns in America and maybe grab a beer and listen to some music, watch some other games. Sure, Lane, just like if you were a fan, you would be sitting there in the stands and not going partying. Give me a break. Let's get to some phone calls here at 855-242-7285. And John starts it off from Louisville. Hello, John.
Well, that's sobering. Two or three losses, huh?
That's what Mr. Rodak said.
Yeah. Hey, I should call you Dr. Feinbaum. You were like a therapist with all the Bama and Texas A&M fans going through PTSD yesterday.
Yesterday was very, very frightening for some of the fans out there.
Yeah. So Jeff announced that Spectrum and ESPN were back together again. And I thought, well, I've got to make up for that college versus college Thursday night game where my neighbors came over and, you know, it was turned off. So we got some food in and we're all set. And, well, I guess I have to ask you, did you do a welfare check on Greeny?
Yeah, I thought Greeny today comes on and literally couldn't speak. And then you flip to the next channel and the news is on and there's an earthquake and I'm like, going, come on, Greeny, get a grip. I mean, I feel your pain. A 42-year-old guy tore his Achilles and is out for the season, but there are more serious things going on.
Well, that was the Messiah to him. Hey, a shout out to Legend for stepping up. When some of the Bama fans didn't call in. And I know it was tongue-in-cheek to so-called.
I was most disappointed in Larry. I've always believed in Larry being a great caller. But, I mean, that was a total choke job last night by Larry not calling in.
Yeah, and, you know, I know it was tongue-in-cheek, the so-called good loss. But I have to take, and he's a Hall of Fame caller, but I have to take umbrage with one thing he said, and that is the transfer portal. Now, Alabama has had top two classes the last 5 years in recruiting. And last year they poached and played seven transfer players. So sure. The real story is they need to be more like a Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan. They need to develop the players they get.
Well, too, and if you're going into the portal, and they brought a few in, namely Jamar Gibbs, but it's pretty obvious now Saban blew it in the portal on the quarterback position. There were multiple opportunities. Sam Hartman was out there. Leary, I know he went after Van Dykes and Drake May, but he struck out. I mean, he ended up getting he was on the remainder shelf in the spring, and that's how he ended up with his quarterback.
Hey, last question, Paul. I'm looking forward to next week. Obviously, Ohio State, Notre Dame, we'll find out how good each team is. And definitely, I think FSU plays Clemson, so this could be the end of Clemson.
And you're right.
Yeah, but this week, are there any teams that move the dial, any games to you?
There are a couple of interesting games. I think LSU is on the clock at Mississippi State. That's a game that I think is nervy. I wouldn't say nerve-wracking, but maybe just nervy. I want to see what Georgia can do against a real opponent. And South Carolina will provide that. They may not provide much more, but and to me, the most exciting game of the day is in Gainesville, Tennessee at Florida.
Oh, they're going to get beat, but we'll see if Shane brings his own chain gang, right?
Well, yeah. Thanks, John. Stacy is up next. Hello, Stacy.
Paul, I'm disappointed. You got to stop letting these people call in talking about the tide is done. Oh, we lost one game. Yeah, we got our butts beat, okay? We didn't play to the standards. We got our butts beat. But you know just as well as anybody else, Alabama is not out of it. You know that. We can run. We can tell me what team that we're going to face, Paul, that possibly going to beat us.
Well,
from here
right
on out.
Now it's impossible to tell you that because I think the most capable LSU is probably the LSU and Texas A&M and Tennessee looked like very dangerous games, and there's so much out on LSU and Texas A&M. I think Ole Miss right now is a scary game, and listen, there may be more or less. We don't know. There's not enough data in yet to tell whether somebody. I'll offer one more thing. If you have a dynamic quarterback.
Okay.
You have a chance to beat Alabama.
That's okay. We got one. We got Merrill. He's going to take care of business, and we're going to be right where we need to be. And I'm going to call you back, Paul.
We're not even sure Milroe is going to start the next game.
But hey, trust me, Paul. He's going to be okay. But let me say this before I go, Paul. JK always got something to say. In the 10th game in the season, he's going to be watching TV. He's going to be watching all these SEC schools. And where will Miami be?
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. How about Kyle up next? Good afternoon, Kyle.
Paul, how are you?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Paul, I'm out here taking out some steam on the golf course, hitting on the range. And, you know, I'm just thinking these – I was at the game Saturday night, and I'm going to tell you honestly, Paul, walking out of that stadium, I thought I was at a funeral. It was sad faces everywhere, people crying and moaning and whining, fan behind me yelling at Coach Saban to change quarterback. Paul, I'm as disgusted as everybody else. All offseason, all we heard about was how good this offensive line was, how the defense was back playing to the Alabama standard. And what did we see Saturday night? We saw a disaster. The offensive line couldn't run block. They couldn't pass block. Defense got no pressure on the quarterback whatsoever. Paul, I just don't. And then for the guy that started your show, to come on and say, well, Alabama don't have the players and the talent. They've been recruiting for the last 5 or 6 years better than anybody. So I don't want to hear the excuses. Moving forward, if teams are going to start loading the box, taking away the run, and they're going to make the quarterback beat you. And if it's Milroe, I don't think he can get it done. Paul, there needs to be major changes at the University of Alabama. Major changes. You need to start from the top.
So if I could translate, Kyle, what you're trying to say, spit it out. What's your first change? I didn't think he wanted to answer that question. It's easy to talk big, tougher to say what you mean. Let's take a break. We have a number of guests, including Reese Davis, a host of College Game Day. He'll join us later in the show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Glad all of you are here. And let's check in with Bash in Boulder. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call, Paul Feinbaum. How is your day going so far?
So far.
That's great to hear. I just wanted to ask you a question about my big three at the Colorado Buffalo and how they compare to the big three from the 2020 Alabama Crimson Tide national champions and Mac Jones and Najee Harris and the eventual Heisman Trophy winner, Devontae Smith, and comparing them to Travis Hunter, Dylan Edwards, and Shedeur Sanders.
Well, I think there are some similarities, and I don't know yet how they're going to play against a top-notch team. And I know, and I don't want to be the guy that derails the train because it's already exceeded many expectations, but Colorado has not been matched up against a top-flight team yet. They will in week 4 and 5 against Oregon and Southern Cal. And if they survive those two games, then, hey, you might be dead on. But they have to survive both of them first. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. And let's talk to Willis, who is in Los Angeles. Hello, Willis.
Hi, Paul. Great program. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
I'm a Cal alum, and I was at the Auburn game. And Tim Cook was there.
Oh, was he?
The Auburn traveling fan and alumni were gracious guests. But
well,
the Bears covered the spread.
Yeah, I mean,
I got to give.
It was a. Unfortunately, most of the country did not see the game because of the hour. But what did you make out of Auburn?
I made that Hugh Freeze was in trouble and he had a bad hand and he played it out to be a winner. He's a smart coach. He used field position, clock management, and when he gets his own recruits in there, watch out.
Well, he's an outstanding coach. Willis, thank you very much for sharing that with us. Rick is up next in Houston. Hey, Rick.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Feeling under the weather a little bit last week, so I wasn't really feeling like calling in. But, hey, wanted to touch base with you on Dumbo Fisher, Bobby Pervert Trino, and DJ Turducken. What happened to them on Saturday couldn't have happened to a better bunch of folks, if you get my drift.
I do get your drift, and I appreciate you calling. Thanks so much. I hope you feel better. Let's check out Jeremy up next. Good afternoon, Jeremy.
Yes, sir. I was just wanting to talk to Kyle, the Alabama fan that called in or whatever. I'm an Alabama fan, too. And, you know, Saban, he's taking on the top football world with two new coordinators. And one of them was just on his staff 3 years ago, not to mention four more other coaches that helped recruit half of the players. I mean, but I'm just saying, Saban has, at 71-year-old, he's still at the top of his game. And these Alabama fans, they need to just chill and support coach and Roll Tide.
That summed it up well. Lou is in Tennessee. Hello, Lou.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man? I just wanted to pick your brain on, you made the comment that you thought that the Gainesville game this weekend was going to be the one that to watch. And I was kind of wondering why you say that. I mean, I'm a diehard Vols fan, And I'm extremely worried about Florida, especially after watching Joe Milton's performance against Austin Peay. What do you think?
Well, when I said that, I think it there because of where the game is, I think that brings a lot of drama to the game. At the moment, I probably favor Tennessee. It's hard to believe in Florida at the based on what I saw in the first game. But, there aren't a lot of great games. I think that's really the factor that led me to Gainesville. But it's also a critical game for Billy Napier. This is not a game that he can throw away with the momentum shifts that occur when you still have a schedule as difficult as his. So that's why I said that. And, I think there's a few things unknown about Tennessee. But I one thing I do know is that Josh Heupel will be the best play caller in the game.
Yeah, I get that. Obviously, Milton's not Hooker, and that was yesterday. But, I've never really seen what there's really no comparison there. And, the only thing that I think that I've seen Joe Milton do, so, and I know it's early in the season, that he didn't do last year when he had his opportunities to play, was he's running the ball now. He's presenting that dual threat kind of deal. That's encouraging, but I just don't think – he wants to send a ball down range 100 miles an hour and the guy's 10 yards away. It's like, man, dude, where's the finesse at? Where's the accuracy? And so Florida scares me. That's all.
Hey, by the way, and, Lou, I didn't indicate that they didn't scare me either. That's why I said that could potentially be the most exciting game of the day. You take care of yourself. Thank you very, very much. Bryson is in Tennessee. Hello, Bryson.
Hey, Paul, it's always good talking to you. I just want to start off by saying I totally disagree with what Lou just said. I have all the faith in the world in Joe Milton right now. All right, it's early in the year. We're not going to hit the ground running how we was flying across the field last year toward the end of the season at the Orange Bowl. I think we have that exact opposite problem that Alabama has right now. I don't think we need to change anything. It's early in the year. We were sleepwalking against Austin Peay. We got punched in the mouth, but you just can't tell me that that's the team that we're going to have this year. And, you can agree or disagree with me on that, but that's just my opinion.
No, I agree. I'm not the least bit concerned. Now, a week from now, I may be in shock based on what we see Saturday night, but I feel pretty good right now. Thank you very much. Gary is in Wyoming. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing great.
Hey, I still think – I'm glad Jim is in good graces with the show again, and I still think there needs to be a 10-minute, 15-minute period for call Jim. Maybe could have used it yesterday. Paul, I want to ask a question related to you. Like, it was pretty interesting what happened to Alabama. And what do you do? It doesn't happen once in a blue moon, but how do you prepare for a show that like what happened yesterday and over the weekend? Why don't you take the country through what happened to Paul Feinbaum a little bit and how he prepared for Monday and coming into work?
Well, what's interesting, Gary, is when I'm watching a game on Saturday night, Monday is a long way off. What I mean by that is this. I'll be on Sunday morning on ESPN talking about probably the biggest game of the day. So I'm thinking, okay, how does this relate to that? And the Alabama game was pretty obvious. Then I do a podcast as well on Sunday. So that makes it easier. By Monday, I've already talked about it a few times. And then I do some stuff Monday morning. So by the time we come on the air at 3 o'clock on Monday, I have already swam through these choppy waters a couple of times. But as the game's going on, my mind is thinking in as many different ways as possible. But mostly, what does it mean ultimately to what we are going to end up doing here? To your question, watching Saturday night, it was obvious. I felt pretty confident. I knew which way we would be going once 3 o'clock came around.
Do you think about like some of the callers that might be calling in and what like on Monday? Oh, sure. Geez, I hope Jim doesn't come in and bomb us, or
no,
I wonder
no,
what legend is going to say.
By the time we start the show, we joke about it among the group here. One thing we try to do on Monday, we did it yesterday. We spent the first – we try to devote as much time to callers as we can because we know right. We don't do that Friday. That's pretty obvious, but we can't do it because we're on a campus and we want to celebrate where we are. So Monday we try to do that pretty quickly because, you know, this is important to us, and we hope it's important to the folks that tune in.
Oh, it's huge. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. But, yeah, Saturdays are always cool because I used to, you know, back in the day when I was a newspaper columnist, I can't tell you how many times I was covering primarily two schools. I went to a game in Baton Rouge once on a Saturday night. I mean, it wasn't just any game either. Yeah, I think that Auburn and LSU were both ranked in the top five or six in the country. It was the game of the day. And on the way, before we went to the game, we were watching the game at a hotel. Alabama lost at homecoming to Ole Miss. That was the night, some of you may remember, that that somebody threw a brick through the head coach's window. And by the time Monday came around, that was the only – nobody – I mean, I don't want to say nobody was concerned about the Auburn game because they probably lost a shot at a national championship that night. It later turned out to be the biggest game of the year. But in the moment, it didn't seem that way. So you really don't try to dictate. We don't try to dictate here what people should talk about. That's why we open the show with a couple of stories and then let it flow. We're up against a break. More of your phone calls and guests right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. And Glenn is up next. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Hey, I was very disappointed in the game Saturday, Alabama and Texas. I mean, some of the players on the offensive line call themselves trench kings. They can't even block. I think they're too overweight. They can't move or something. They can't pass, protect. The offensive line was awful. And I think the coordinators should be down on the field to coach the players up. Sides up in the press box, and it's just Milroe throwing interceptions. There's three defenders around the receiver, and he throws the interception. I mean, them saying not having any energy to play Texas in practice. I mean, man, what gets you up for playing Texas? I mean, they're top five teams.
Thank you very much. Trey is up next in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Trey.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. I want to touch on something that Heather Dennett said yesterday, and then I want to throw something out there at you and see what you think. She mentioned something about Alabama going through and then losing to Georgia. There's no way Alabama gets in the playoffs if they run the table and then lose to Georgia. And I feel the same way about LSU. And I don't even think they would deserve it. But let me throw this out there at you. And I think LSU would have a better shot than Alabama because they lost to Florida State on the road. If Alabama or LSU was to lose an SEC game during the season, but turn around and beat a number one Georgia and be the SEC champion, and Texas was a Big 12 champion and Florida State was an ACC champion, because we know Auburn that one year with two losses, they would have beaten Georgia in that SEC championship game. They were getting in. Do you not think Alabama and or LSU, and again, I think LSU would have a better claim because they lost on the road at Florida State instead of at home to Texas. And if that happened, what would that do to a one-loss Georgia if they're not an SEC champion?
Well, it would be circumstantial, of course. Georgia with one loss, it would depend on the ranking, I think, of the team they lost to, assuming it was Alabama. It's a lot to figure out right now.
And don't you think that Alabama and LSU fans need to be the biggest Texas and Florida State fans there is? They need those two teams to win out. Do you not agree?
Well, I think assuming that both turn out to be really good teams, but yeah, I mean, I think the fear for Alabama is more whether it even gets in that position. based on what you've seen, Trey, do you really believe this team can run the table?
Paul, I'm worried about this weekend, and I'm tired of hearing it blaming on, I'm not blaming. Milroy was 10% of the problem, Paul. When you're picking up balls at your feet and you're expected to pick the ball up and read through your progressions, that's impossible. And when you got people, two and three people in your face in 2 seconds, you don't have time to go through your progression. So it's offensive and defensive line play to me. So they got a lot to work on. They were bad Saturday. It's one of the worst I've seen. But I appreciate you taking my call, and you have a great day, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I think for an Alabama fan to be worried, okay, if we run the table and then beat Georgia, I don't think my head can handle not exploding thinking about all that. Jacob is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. I called you about in February talking about Florida State, and I'm just wondering, what do you think the toughest game on our schedule is? I think it's Clemson, but I feel like we can beat Clemson.
Oh, I think it's pretty obvious it's Clemson. I mean, there may be some other challenging games, but Clemson on the road, as bad as even with Clemson looking bad the other night, that's still a very it's close to an impossible game.
Well, I think it's our year, and I think we can win the ACC title this year.
Well, I hope you're right. Thank you very much, Jacob. We head to the break. A lot to do. Remainder of the 3 hours. We'll talk to Chrissy Ford, Floyd in the next hour. We'll also talk to Reese Davis and Matt Stinchcomb. We have already had Mike Rodak, who predicted 2 or 3 losses for the Crimson Tide. He covers them, by the way.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.